Welcome to another edition of the Litigation Psychology Podcast, brought to you by Courtroom Sciences. I am Dr. Bill Kineski, and here we go again, 2024, rocking and rolling, folks, rocking and rolling. I have a fantastic guest today, and we're going to spend the whole time today talking about money, and we're not talking about your personal finance. We're talking about, well, actually, we are going to talk a little bit about your personal finance and about how those ugly habits may creep into your professional finance at a law firm. But we're going to talk about law firm finance and how to manage money, how to balance the books, how to watch your spending. I think this is something any firm, regardless of size, I think it's a really, really important issue. And I'd like to introduce my guest, Ms. Leah Miller. Leah is, she has the company LMN Financial. She has an MBA, and she's also located in the Sunshine State down in Southwest, Florida. I'm up here in Orlando. Leah, how are you?
I'm good. It's good to be here today, and it is sunny and beautiful out.
Leah, I recorded a video about 2 hours and put it on LinkedIn, and there was frost on my roof. I was freezing out there. So we got a little frost here in Orlando this morning. But you know what? You don't have to shovel it, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
That's awesome. So before I get started, because I have a lot of specific questions, tell me, just kind of give me the 30,000 foot view of your company and your background and the services that you provide, because I think this is really important for our audience.
So I started as a paralegal, and that was what my associate's degree was in. And I was working at a personal injury law firm. And my goal one day was to manage a law firm. And so I, by right place, right time, and hard work, started doing that when I was in my late 20s, which was a lot earlier than I thought it was going to be. And so I worked my way up in that firm, finished my bachelor's degree, my MBA. And by the time I left, my title was firm administrator CFO. And I essentially did everything in the personal injury law firm. And I was still a litigation paralegal when I left. So a year ago, I started LMN Financial Services just as a side business, doing some bookkeeping and things like that. And I realized there was such a need in law firms, especially, but all small businesses really, for more financial help. And so, you know, the business owners are really smart. They do really well at what they're doing, but they just don't know the financial part of it.
Yeah.
And so my business started growing a lot faster than I anticipated. And I left my full-time job last May. And so I've been doing this full-time since May, and I offer, fractional CFO services, which I'm sure we'll get into what that means, because most people don't. And also bookkeeping, and for primarily law firms. And I have some, you know, like law firm adjacent clients and things like that. But for the most part, I focus on law firms.
That's outstanding. So you said early in your career, your dream was to manage a law firm?
Yeah.
Okay. Have you sought any help from like a psychiatrist? Psychologist. Have you seen a mental health what the hell is wrong with you? I talk to managing partners at a law firm, and they're just pulling their hair out of managing.
Honestly,
a law
firm. It came from, I was a paralegal with an office manager who wasn't the greatest, and I saw things that I felt like I could do better to help the paralegals and help the whole system. I love the paralegal profession. I actually teach some paralegal classes at the local college.
Oh, cool.
So I'm big on education and just helping people. Yeah. So that's why I wanted to do that. I did not, at one point, law school was kind of on the table, but then I got married and had kids, and I was like, I don't really want to go to law school. And I like the business part of it more. So yeah, I probably am crazy. I don't miss some of that craziness in an office day to day. It's kind of nice. Only managing, you know, my little business now.
Yeah, well, that's fantastic. And I can tell you what, I mean, in our firm, other small businesses, business owners I know, and plenty of law firms I work with, the administrative and financial part of it, nobody wants to talk about. It's a major headache. Quite frankly, most people don't know what they're doing. And they're trying their best, and they're making a lot of mistakes, you know, unknowingly. And this is a really, really important part of any business, and a law firm's a business. So let's kind of dig right into this. I know we haven't outlined the file. This is cool. Let's talk about revenue and profitability. Now, not the same thing, right? We have to go back to our business, our economics 101. Talk to us about that, and how, based on your experience, law firms should be, you know, perceiving both of those things. Because when it comes down to it, and I'm sure at every partners meeting, this is probably the number one thing they're talking about, right? Share with us kind of, you know, your perspectives on this issue, and maybe kind of the how to see it and maybe how not to see it based on your experience.
So revenue, you know, people say a lot of times is a vanity number. You know, I want to make $1 million this year, but if you spend $1 million and $2,
yeah,
then you really haven't done anything other than work to pay the bills of your business.
Yeah.
So while I think revenue goals are good and that gives you a starting point, there's a lot more to it than just I want to hit $1 million. And so I'm very goal driven, and that's how I work with my clients, as we talk about our goals. And so, you know, if you tell me you want to make $1 million this year, well, what does that $1 million do for you? What do you want to do with that $1 million? There's got to be more to the goals than just that vanity. I want to tell everybody I have a 7-figure business.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, two parts of the revenue is, you know, it really is a vanity number. And what is that goal going to do for you? So what we really need to look at is the profit. And how much you are actually making, how much, you know, your employees are making, and things like that. And so that's when we really get into the expenses and look at how are you spending that revenue in a law firm. There should be profit in a law firm. If I talk to you and you tell me you're at, you know, 5% profit for the year in your law firm, there's something that's going on there, because, you know, law firms do generate profit. They should.
Yeah.
And so that's what I really help clients get into, and get into the numbers of, you know, how much are we spending on marketing? How much are we spending on wages? What does our profit look like, and things like that?
Yeah. So back to Rev, do you find it when you're consulting with law firms, do you find an overemphasis on the vanity number and not enough attention towards these other issues that you've brought up?
Yeah, there's a lot of that. And where, like I said, you know, I want to be a 7-figure firm and things like that. And so, which is great. But yeah, there's always an emphasis on how much money we're going to make and not so much on the profit of that. And a lot of that comes from, like you said, people just don't want to pay attention to the financial part or the management part and all of that in their firm. They're worried about practicing law. They don't understand the financial part all that much more than is there cash in the bank to get through the day. Great. And so they don't really want to get into those numbers. And so the revenue number is like, that's what they can focus on. That's what they understand the most.
Do you see the size of the law firm as it increases, the complexity increases? Is there a positive correlation there?
There is. And I actually just did a video recently where I talked about, you know, getting, when I work with some smaller law firm owners and some bigger ones, but the smaller ones, when they're first reaching that 7-figure goal, the complexities change. And so I have a client who's working towards that goal right now, and she will reach it this year, but she's bringing on associates and things like that. And so not only is there a complexity with how many people you're hiring and things like that, there's also a mental complexity to it, where there are now people going into her firm and clients of her firm that she's never met with. And so there's a mindset shift that really has to change as well when you are getting to those higher numbers. And so it definitely changes the way that you manage things.
Yeah. Cause I mean, I know most people I talk to, my new title, I'm the chief growth officer at Courtroom Sciences. Everybody wants to grow. Right. But I mean, isn't it true that with growth comes headaches like this? And if you don't have the people in the right places that have special training like you to deal with this, that can have a devastating impact on your profit number, right?
Yeah, for sure. And that's when things kind of get out of control, because
you're
like, you start getting busier and you're like, I'm going to hire this person. I need another attorney. I need help doing this. And if you're thinking about it, like, okay, I think I have enough cash in the bank, and I kind of know we generate this much a month, so I can afford that attorney. I can afford this. Yes, I'll go do that marketing thing. And you're not sitting down and looking at the numbers every month.
Yeah.
Then it can get out of control, and you get to the end of the year and you have no profit and you barely paid yourself. What did you work for?
Yeah. So let's talk about that. I was reading, this is like, God, 15 years ago, I was having dinner like at the hotel the night before I was giving a speech, and the guy sat next to me and we were just watching the ball. I remember I was in downtown Chicago. I was right off of Michigan Avenue, and we started talking, and this guy was obviously very successful. I was younger. I was a younger man then. And I started asking him questions about money, and he was like the CFO of a company and did really well. And we're talking, and he's like, here, let me give you some free advice. And he said, you know, for your personal finances, right? He's like, you really need to sit down like every week and look at the numbers. I'm like, every week. I'm like, okay, maybe every 4 weeks or, you know, once a month or whatever. I'm like, every week. He's like, you've got to be on top of the numbers. And a lot can happen in 30 days. What is your recommendation? Like, it's because some would argue letting 30 days go by, boy, a lot can happen with the numbers. Maybe you should be looking at them every week or every couple days. Kind of where are you at on that? Because these numbers can change pretty drastically, particularly when you start getting busy.
Yeah, so I'm big on, like I said, I offer fractional CFO services, and that's my big offering, where I meet with my clients at least once a month, normally every other week, or we check in between. But another service that I offer and that I am really big on is the accounting bookkeeping services, because I think that's where you see your numbers every week or every other week. And so traditionally, you know, your CPA or bookkeeper will go in, reconcile your accounts sometime the next month, and you'll get your financials, you know, the end of February for January. Well, if you're not looking at your financials for January until the end of February, and you haven't looked at them at all, then how can you make any changes for what happened in January? Or, yeah, you know, I even see it where it's quarterly. They have their bookkeepers go in and do all of that stuff. It's not even monthly. And so I'm big on at least once a month, but it should be more than that. And so I know, like, when we do bookkeeping, we're updating everything weekly, so that if any time, you know, even if my clients aren't meeting with me specifically more than once a month, they can go in and they can see, you know, they can run their numbers and see where they are halfway through the month. And I think that's really important to see. So,
yeah. So define to us, because I think this is a new term for many folks. What is a fractional CFO?
So have to lay the groundwork. A CPA and a bookkeeper, they're going to look at the past. So a bookkeeper is going to categorize all your past transactions. A CPA is going to do your taxes. And they're really interested in what has happened already in your business.
Sure.
A CFO for any business, a full-time CFO, is somebody who is going to look at the future. And they're going to, you know, look at your budget and your cash flow forecast and kind of make plans for the future. And you're using data from the past, but you're also looking into the future. A fractional CFO is a newer term. And so it's somebody that comes in, because a full-time CFO obviously is, you know, a big time position that costs a lot of money for a firm. They can hire a fractional CFO, and that person they meet with, you know, once, twice a month. That person's getting into their finances and all of that at a fraction of the cost and a fraction of the time. And so that's really what this fractional CFO is. And so you're getting that financial data and that outside person to really get into your finances, but you're not paying, you know, $200,000 a year.
Sure. Do they get involved in goal setting? The fractional.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Because now here's what I'd like to hear. I think this is a key question for any small business, but particularly law firms. When you start to get involved and you kind of evaluate the goal setting that the attorneys have done, how much of it do you feel is often unrealistic?
So Sometimes it is. And something that I do, and I what I've actually been doing a lot the last month, because we're the beginning of the year, is they'll tell me their goal, their revenue goal. And I will look at that historical data and say, okay, your average case is this much. So if you want to reach your goal, you need to be closing 30 cases a month. And then they'll say to me, well, we're only doing 10 right now. I'm like,
yeah,
okay, I don't doubt that you can eventually get to your goal, but let's see what the steps are to getting to that goal. And so that's, they can bring that information back to their staff and say, look, we need to close 30 cases a month. That means we need to be sending 40 demands a month. That means we need to be bringing in 60 new cases a month. And so you can kind of build it out, and then that helps with your marketing and all of that.
Yeah. Well, I find as a clinical neuropsychologist, I find that human beings are impractical, terrible goal setters. When I was getting my PhD, I was studying exercise behavior. Right. Because this was around the year 1999, 2000. Obesity was they called it an epidemic. It was crazy. Right. And so all this research money is pouring in the exercise and dietary research. And you interview people as part of our research. We'd say, well, what are your fitness goals? And these are like sedentary people. I have no experience, right, exercising. And they're bringing me like magazine covers from Sports Illustrated, you know, fitness magazines with body. I want to look like that dude. It's like, whoa, like, come on. So I think with that type of behavior, but particularly financial behavior too, decision-making, it's often flawed. And I think maybe somebody like you who doesn't have the emotional connection to the firm, right? And you can see this through a more objective lens. And I imagine you can find some flaws with goal setting, amongst other things, that maybe internally they can't see because it's them. Is that pretty much accurate?
That is accurate. And that goes back to that revenue number and the way I set goals with people. And so they'll say, you know, they want a specific revenue, but we talk about more like, what does that look like for your firm? So I have, and this also goes, a lot of people ask me what benchmarks they should shoot for in law firms. But I always start with the goals, because I have a client whose goal is to make a certain amount of money a year and work less hours because they have a family. They want to spend more time with their family.
Sure.
So, okay, that means that we're going to have to hire more people to do the work and all of that. And so their profit has to be something specific, but their revenue, like, it, that's, you know, pretty fluid on what that could be. I have other clients who they have a profit goal. They want to hire, you know, so many people. They want to open another office, and their goals are like that. And they don't mind working 40 hours a week or whatever it may be. And so that changes the revenue goal. And so we really look at not so much the revenue, but what you want your life to look like.
Yeah.
And I even, you know, show, that's part of why I started my own business, is I knew I wanted more time with my kids. I knew I wanted the flexibility. Like, I knew what I wanted my life to look like. I'm still working on that, but that's kind of how, you know, you can figure out your goals and what they are and take them away from the actual money number.
Yeah. Let's talk about cost control. That's a big deal at any small business. I think it is at law firms. Give me your general philosophy towards this, and maybe where you see some kind of common cost control pitfalls that maybe most law firms aren't even really aware of. And then you show them and they're like, oh, wow.
The biggest one is going to be wages. And
I'll break
that down to, you're spending 50% of your revenue on wages.
That's
too
correct.
High for a law firm.
Yeah.
And while I don't follow the benchmarks exactly, that's still too high for a law firm, unless you're in a growth phase and you anticipate your revenue to increase significantly, you know, over the next couple of months. But if we're talking a year from now and you're still at 50% wages, then you're not in a growth phase. You have an employee problem. And so, and then they're like, well, my employees are all busy all the time. And so like we need this many employees. Like, okay, well then you have a process problem, because
so it could be they're not charging enough, right? And that
or,
could be
or
shit,
that
right?
they're not charging enough. Like, do we need to increase revenue? Do we need to decrease? And I don't ever say like go out and fire everybody. I don't like that idea either. But let's be more intentional. And I think when it comes to cost control, my biggest thing that I talk to people about is being intentional with what they do. Don't sign on to every new vendor that calls you and like pitches you the best new software. Like, what software is working for our firm?
Yeah.
Let's do this our way. And that's how you can control costs. If you are overstaffed and somebody leaves, let's talk about maybe we need to change up the processes and not replace that person right away until we increase the revenue. Because really, for profit, you either increase revenue or you decrease costs. That's, you know, it really is simple when it comes down to it.
Yeah.
People just don't, they don't understand it. And so they don't want to deal with it is what happens.
Yeah. Okay. So true or false? And I know the answer is going to be, it depends, and that's fine. But, and I'm not cross-examining you. Ms. Miller, true or false? You have to spend money to make money. Do you agree with that statement?
I do agree. I also agree it does depend on your goals. But yes, you do have to make, and so we're talking about all these problems that law firms have. You know what one of the biggest problems is? They don't spend money. They're so scared. So when you first start your business,
the other part of this, right? You could, this could go in the, you could spend way too much money, but then you could be too frugal, not spend enough, and you have a different set of problems.
Yeah. Yeah. And I get it because obviously, like, I have a business, I'm starting to grow it, I have to spend money. It's scary. In the beginning, you are just trying to hustle as much business as you can so you can like pay your salary that you were making when you worked for a big law firm. But eventually, when you have the processes in place and you've got the revenue coming in and you have the good staff and you're all of that, you have to spend some money. And so you will reach a plateau where you're not going to reach those growth goals if you don't hire a COO that can operate and do all of the managing of your firm. Because if you want to actually practice law, you can't manage the firm once you hit a certain level. Yeah. Like I was saying, my client who is growing has to hire associates. And so there's associates that are coming in because you can only handle so much work. So yes, I agree. You have to spend money to make money with the caveat that it has to be intentional and well thought out and you have to understand it.
Okay. I'm going to bring up a controversial topic because that's what I do on this podcast. Speaking of cost control. Okay. The perfect time for my rant. Before I get into the contract rant, I get to, I'm okay. So my family, my wife and my children, they're spenders. I am a saver. Okay. So there's a natural conflict in this household every day, every week. I get the credit card bill. This is like 10 days ago. I get the credit card bill and I'm like, wait a second. This is a little high. And this is for January. I'm like, I remember December's was high because, you know, it's Christmas and we did, you know, bought gifts and stuff like that. Some expenses for Christmas stuff. But January, that's a dead, I got to go look it up, right? And I have, it came to my knowledge that my family, and by the way, all guilty. I lined up up against a wall. I cross-examined them for 30 minutes and is guilty, guilty, guilty. They admitted it, and they were going to this new, that's a, it's like a, not a health food place, but it's called Blends. It's here local, in Orlando, and they do all these different types of drinks that mix vitamins and protein. So it's a very kind of like health thing, right? And it's located near a gym, and it's new, and they fell in love with it. By the way, they sell, donuts. That are like pure protein donuts. They're protein donuts and they taste phenomenal. I was like, wow. Okay. So I look at the credit card bill. I took a picture of it and I sent it out to my family. And I'm not going to tell you the number. It was obnoxious. It was a car payment. And I'm looking at, I'm like, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Tuesday. And I looked for the whole month. And here's the problem. By the time I figured this out and about choked my family like to death in my kitchen and went to jail for the rest of my life, that was not a pleasant interaction. By the time I figured it out, it was too late.
Yep.
How do you, so in that type of scenario, oftentimes you don't find out you have a cost control problem until you have a problem.
Yep.
Right? Is there a way, because I would love, and I know maybe there's a way to do this, I don't know. But if I would have known after the first three purchases, going, whoa, wait a second, I may have been able to prevent the next 3 weeks and the hundreds of dollars that they blew without my permission, by the way. So this rant is going to go on and on. But like, I didn't know. What's a way for law firms to monitor cost control so they don't figure out, wow, I have this huge problem and it's already done, they can't do anything about it?
Well, one of the things we do when, and what I do with my CFO clients, which by the way, I have had a addiction to expensive drinks in the past also, but mine was always Starbucks, which is just really bad.
Hey, don't do that. I'm a Dunkin' Donuts guy for a reason. Starbucks, I have a completely different Starbucks rant, because here's the thing, I refuse to say the word venti. I won't do it. I go up there because I know I'm a blue collar Dunkin' Donuts dude. I walk up, I'm like, I want the largest coffee you got. She's like, a venti? I go, no. I want this the largest coffee cup you have, fill it with black coffee. She goes, so you want a venti? I'm like, I'm not saying the word. I go, is that the biggest cup? She goes, yeah. I go, okay, but I'm not saying the word. Because I don't believe in that. It's a large or it's an extra large. Once we went to that language, they lost me. And then their coffee is like three times the price as Dunkin' Donuts is fantastic coffee.
Yeah. But
I digress. So back to your Starbucks.
So we do cash flow forecasts is what I do with a lot of my CFO clients. And so that's, you know, when we start talking about bigger purchases and things like that, we can kind of like project it out for the next 6 months. And then we can talk about, you know, if we have a higher purchase and things like that, that we need to do in 2 months, or if we're going to hire somebody, what that looks like.
Yeah.
And also for cost control, it's hard for attorneys to really get into their finances every week. I would love for them to look at it every other week, but we at least once a month, which, going back to your story where the guy told you to look every week, once a month for an attorney to look at their law firm finances equates to once a week, because I speak to attorneys who have never looked at a profit and loss statement before in their 10, 15 years.
That's incredible.
And they do well. That's the thing. They do well, but they just don't ever have actual control over it to make those intentional growth decisions. And that's my whole philosophy is, I don't care how you spend money. People, like, they get kind of weird sometimes. They're like, I want to buy, you know, this. And I'm like, I don't care. I do not judge anybody. I see so many purchases and books and things like that, that like, it doesn't mean much to me, you know, anymore. I don't care how you spend it. Just be intentional about it. Make a plan. So like, if we budget, if we make a plan and we have a cash flow forecast, then I'm fine. Spend whatever. But if you do have purchases that happen and you are out of control, let's just start now to gain control, because cash flow issues are probably one of the biggest issues and cause the most stress as a small business owner.
Yeah.
Is not being able to make payroll or not, you know, and that's what gets attorneys into problems. Is because they're looking for cash. And so just having a plan.
And now, and billing and collections, that's a whole different issue. We don't need to go there. But like, where do you see, again, now I'm just going right back into my personal life, going back to this credit card bill. I call it leakage. And I have this team meeting with my family, and I walk around like this with the credit card bill. And I'm just, you know, walking around just laying it on my family. And I kind of explain to them, I'm like, this is death by a thousand cuts. It's the $7 here and the $12 there. And then, oh, this is the worst, right? Chick-fil-A, 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 Chick-fil-A. I'm like, We have I got turkey in the goddamn freeze the fridge. I got bread. I got a bread box.
Yeah.
I got
yeah.
chicken. I got chicken breast in the freezer. We can defrost and make Chick-fil-A. I'm like, good God, people, what the hell is wrong with you? And I just lay it on him. It does not, by the way, none of this works in the family situation.
No, it doesn't.
However, but like, so like, what do you see in law? Is it a lot of the little things adding up that can kind of come back to bite you that no one's really paying attention to?
The biggest thing now is software.
Wow, really?
And so, yeah, because there's a new software every day that'll help you do this and this and this.
Wow.
And so there's a big, you know, they'll buy this one and this one. And then you're looking at $1,000 a month in software and you're only using part of each software. So that can be a big one for smaller firms. And the other thing is in the marketing vendor space is you sign up for something, you don't go back and see if it's actually working for you, but you just let the contract keep renewing and things like that. So
it's
I
like
know when I was
like signing up for HBO and you don't watch HBO and they're just billing you every month. It's like a cable add-on or a YouTube TV add-on that you're not aware of and you're just getting dinged on it and no one's paying attention.
Yeah. And I used to find that when I was a firm administrator, when I first started as the office manager, I would be like, well, why are we paying for this to be on this obscure website that only attorneys know about and no actual person that's ever going to hire us is going to come to this website. You know, and that's $500 a month. And then we've got, you know, $200 here. And so that adds up as well. And so I'm big on let's do an audit of your expenses every couple months, you know, once a quarter, once every 6 months.
Break it down.
And that's what I do. And so, you know, I'm not saying for these law firm owners to go get into their financials. I want them to understand it. And I come from it from an education standpoint where I want them to understand the financials. But I'm not saying go dig into your profit and loss and find out what expense is too much. That's why you hire somebody like me to go get into it. And then I bring the high level stuff to my clients. I'm like, hey, all this looks good, but like this one expense, we need to talk about this. You know, one I'm thinking of now is a storage expense, storing old files. Most law firms are going paperless, but if they've been around for a long time, they're paying storage fees. So like, how can we, you know, a lot of times we can hire somebody to scan in the old files for cheaper than we're paying for storage. So just little things like that is really where it sucks into your profit. And if you're talking 5% of your revenue are those little charges that you could get rid of, that's 5% more in profit.
Yeah. Can I hire you to drive to Orlando and yell at my family? Would you?
No, because I'm a spender in my family. So my
Oh, you are not.
I am.
Oh, you hypocrites. No way.
I am.
No.
With my business.
You just blew this podcast just blew up. You're the spender?
I
don't even know who you are anymore, Leah.
I like spending, but I'm really good. You know, I worked in a bankruptcy law firm for 2 years when I was like 24, 25 and just married. And that was probably the best paralegal job to ever have as a just married 24-year-old. Because I saw like when I did budgets for people and I saw like what could happen when you get in over your head with spending. But yeah, no, I like my expensive coffee and, you know, purses. So
wow. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. So I'm not the only one. Okay.
Yeah.
So I want to wrap up with one final topic here. Because I see this, I've heard this from attorneys. This is very specific. I guess this would fall under marketing budgets. There are I have to say this and not get in trouble. But see, I get in trouble a lot. I get in trouble a lot, Leah. Because I just tell the truth. And I tell, this is what I'm hearing from clients. This is what I'm hearing from attorneys. I'm just, don't shoot the messenger. But I always get shot at it, right? I've had many of attorneys recently tell me that the amount of money they're spending on sending their attorneys to conferences that are epically useless and just kind of big cocktail parties where there's really no business development opportunities. the presentations suck. You have to pay for travel. They jack up the hotel rooms because usually it's in a really nice location. I've had a lot of attorneys very quietly tell me, like, this is a waste. I want to be involved in this group, but like, I'm not really getting as much revenue out of this group, if any. Like, maybe it's some like collegial thing, right? It's good to have colleagues mm-hmm. and to share ideas, but at what expense, right? So give us some advice maybe on how a law firm, particularly the medium sized or small law firm, where it's like, hey, there's this big conference, it'd be nice to go, but do I really need to go? Or would that money be invested in maybe in something else for marketing that the firm could do? Meaning, like, for example, there's kind of two things I see, right? Is you go to the conference, you send two or three attorneys, it's going to cost thousands of dollars in travel alone, the registration fees, and then kind of what are you getting out of that? Versus, you know, you rent out the luxury box at the hockey game or the football game or the baseball game, and you're inviting clients and interacting with them. Those are two very different ways to spend money in marketing. What are your opinions on some of this stuff? Because I see a lot of money being spent on both, and sometimes it works, oftentimes it doesn't. It could be a large waste.
So I am big in the LinkedIn community, which is where I met you.
Yes.
And I see a lot of this because there are a lot of conferences and things like that. I think it really comes down to what is the goal of the law firm and the goal of those attorneys. So I think there are conferences and there's a big push for masterminds and things like that that cost money for law firm owners who are learning more the business of law than practicing law. And I think that's important. And that goes back to what we've been talking about of they just don't understand the finances and the business aspect and all of that. So I think if you're intentional with what you want to do for those, but I will agree, I've seen in the past where the big CLE conferences where you send everybody and it is just a big party, like, you have to get your CLE credits. I agree with that. Obviously, you have to do that to practice law,
sure.
Especially, you know, in the state of Florida, I know those for sure. But are you going there to learn something that's useful, or are you just going to get the credits? Because you could just get the credits from your house on your computer.
Yeah.
So
And there's a big social there's a big social component too, which
yes.
Yeah, I guess I get it. But I guess I've heard a lot of it. I guess what I'm saying is I've heard many of attorneys not really use things like conferences
yes.
To the right way, and yeah. it's really 100% expense as opposed to an investment. Whereas I think if you did get the skybox for the, you know, the football game or whatever, and you bring clients in and you're spending the day with them, you're interacting.
Yeah.
I would see that as maybe a much better bang for your buck.
I agree with you, and I think it's just it's the intention behind it. You know, if your intention is to build referral relationships, and you go to a conference that's only personal injury attorneys that are your going against you, then like, what are you getting from that? If you're going to a conference to learn more about how to, you know, run your law firm the right way and deal with your people and learn the things that you don't know yet and you're actually learning, I think that's a good, you know, money way.
Yeah.
If you are looking to bring in clients, obviously you're not going to meet clients at a conference for lawyers.
Typically
so
not.
You have to find...
And that's one of the problems is a lot of these, now some of these conferences, I will say some of these conferences, sometimes it's half clients, half lawyers. There's opportunity there. Other times it's 95% lawyers, and there may be a learning component, but like you said, you know, you can sit at your computer and do that online versus go to Las Vegas and, you know, spend a bunch of money, and then probably you lose most of your personal money at the blackjack table.
I think the biggest thing is just the intention behind it and being intentional with what you're doing and not just doing it just to spend money. And I think a lot of times, you know, back to all of the costs, is sometimes we just spend money to spend money because it sounds good and it looks good. And you just have to really think, like, is this cost going to get me towards my goal? And if it's not, then maybe look at it a little bit closer and think like maybe that money would be spent better somewhere else. If you have a bunch of money to blow, then I guess, you know, do whatever you want. But for the most part, like just be intentional and put thought behind what you're spending money on, whether it be, you know, hiring a new person, buying that software, going to the conference, having the coaching, all of that stuff is just, and especially in marketing, just make sure you're intentional and it's working for you towards your goals.
Yeah. I want to wrap it up there, but I do want to emphasize something you said, which is important. You do need to spend money to make money. It's just, you got to spend it the right way. And I've seen the opposite of people not wanting to spend any money. And then you're creating a new problem. So it's, you do got to spend money. You just got to spend it wisely and making sure you're getting return on investment. We had a couple groups we belonged with here at Courtroom Sciences where we invested into them for a year and went to their conferences and we sponsored. And some of those groups, huge pay, like no brainer, like, oh my gosh, you know, $20,000 a year, but wow, we're meeting all these people. It is generating revenue. We're making new relationships. Whereas a different group, $20,000 a year, and then a year goes by and you ain't get one phone call. No, not maybe the people you wanted at the conferences, right? And then it turns out, so I think that's something that as time goes by, I think it's important to reevaluate, right?
Yes.
Okay, we're going to invest into just this something. Yeah, you know, let's evaluate it, see if it's making sense. So Leah, tell our folks, your website is lmnfinancial.com.
It's lmnfinancial.com.
Lmnfinancial.com.
And then I am on LinkedIn and
you're big on LinkedIn. I see you every day on LinkedIn.
Daily.
Yes. And we will post this on LinkedIn.
Yeah. Find me on LinkedIn. And that's where I have a lot of just tips and things like that. I'm always talking to people in my DMs on LinkedIn about my posts.
In fact, our first, I don't know if you remember this. This is important. I want to get this out there because I think this is something that you do. This is a great point to end on. The reason I reached out to you on LinkedIn is you posted something about compensation plans. Mm-hmm. And another massive headache attorneys tell me is, I don't know how to pay these people. I don't know how to make them happy. And these goddamn millennials keep jumping around from job to job to job. Like, I don't know how to keep people. And you posted something about that. And I remember I reached out to you like, boy, that's something really interesting. Like, how do you, is that something that you look at? Because here's the thing. We're talking about revenue, profit, everything's firing on all cylinders. Well, if you're having high turnover because you're not compensating people in a way that's incentivizing or making them stay, I think you have a bigger problem. Is that something that someone like yourself can assist with?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I help with figuring out like bonuses, incentives and things like that, and just ways that make it make sense. But yes, I remember when you reached out to me and we went back and forth and I was giving you my advice on it. And I mean, you aren't a client. You probably aren't going to be a client. Like, you were just somebody who reached out to me in LinkedIn, and I do that all the time. And so as much as I have time to do, I will respond and just give my opinion on that. So.
And that's awesome. And I want you to get plenty of exposure here, and anybody can reach out to you, you know, with questions, just like people reach out to me with questions. I know you're happy to answer them, and maybe there'll be an engagement for you. But Leah, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
I think this was a fantastic discussion. I think this is a topic that does not get enough attention. And so maybe later in the year, we can have you back and maybe take a deeper dive into one of these subtopics, because I think we covered this at a pretty high level, because I'm sure there's some deeper things that we could talk about. But thank you so much for being on the podcast. To our audience members, thank you for participating in another edition of the Litigation Psychology Podcast. We'll see you next time.